Welcome to the Finding North podcast. I'm Chris Morris. This week's story is a paranormal called Through Darkness. Please enjoy. It only comes in complete darkness, which is likely why it blows my candles out at night. The last candle burns down to nearly its final circle of wax, sits before me, its flame flickering as though trying to brighten and ward off the thing that has been tormenting me within this damned house. "Keep it up," I urge it in my weary mind. "Just one more hour until dawn." But alas, its flame now whimpers like a distraught child. Its dance has become that of a small animal caught by a larger predator, wriggling, writhing, but ultimately accepting that nothing more may be done to avoid the inevitable. And ultimately, the predator can snap its jaws shut at any moment and put the poor beast out of its misery. And as though just by thinking it, I hear it once more. A swift burst of air from a wretched mouth that has spoken naught but poison for all of its time. The flame does not move at all, but simply disappears in an instant. Suddenly I can see nothing around me except that which hides the worst of the horrors that reside with me in my house. I make an attempt to call out, but my throat feels as though it swallowed my heart. I'm gasping for even a paltry amount of air, but I'm choked by distress. Perhaps then I should stand, move out of my living room and out of this blasted house, dart into the garden and beyond, out into the wild countryside underneath pale moonlight, not enough to see my way properly, but perhaps enough to keep this unearthly thing away. But this I can manage no more than calling out into the void, for my legs feel held in place by hands that clench tightly and refuse to loosen their grip. And now I hear it, the same whisper that has tormented me these past few weeks. My name, Stephen, on the tongue of that dreadful thing which comes from me only in darkness. Once more I can feel cold hands press with weight against my shoulder, and having no inclination to discover what these mean for me, I bolt to the door and run to the outside of the house, where the only thing that chases me is the harsh winter's wind, its bites no less fierce than that which pursues me in darkness. And stumbling now through the tall grasses of the dishevelled and jilted garden, I dare a quick glance back at the house. The room behind the window is shrouded in black and void of life. But silhouetted against this, a thin figure stands untouched by any shadow. And if it weren't for the fact that my Rose had been dead for these past 5 weeks, I might believe it to be her. For the long curls of red hair are just as I remember, and thinking of her now, I regret once more my final unhappy and desperate words to her as she passed. "No, don't go." "Curse it," my frozen lips whisper, the breath turning to vapour and joining the clouds above. "Curse the thing which stands at the window." For now I truly believe this spectre, this demon, takes the form of my departed love for no other reason but to further torment me. I cannot see its face, but I have no need or want to. Its hideous eyes will no doubt be narrowed, gazing with hungry pleasure out of the window and laughing at my misfortune. Its grotesque and smiling mouth will be licked by the equally repulsive tongue which has whispered such egregious evil to me when all the lights have gone out. "Begone, foul thing!" I shout to the window. "Leave this place! Leave me to grieve in peace!" But instead of vanishing as I hoped, the creature takes a sedated step forwards, and its face catches the brightest of the moonlight. If I was cold before, I am freezing now, for what I now see before me might send a chill down the spine of even the most steadfast of men. "Rose?" My voice comes softly, but more surely now than it had before. Perhaps the heart which once lodged itself there has broken into enough pieces that it can no longer trap the sound inside me. There can be no doubt about it. The thing which has been trying to whisper to me in darkness is Rose. If I could not have told by the curls of her hair, then I could tell by the radiant and splendid way she seems to gaze at me from behind the glass. If I couldn't tell by this, the eyes themselves would give it away. But now the blackness behind her seems to grow and wraps her in a dark blanket of despair. "No," I cry. "Don't go." But my plea is in vain. A moment later, the room within the window is the same as it had been moments earlier, dark, cold, and empty of all cheer. The eyes gave it away. Beautiful they once were, and beautiful they remained through the ignoble malaise which plagued her in her final days, and took my love's sight from her. How wretched a thing it was! Such an awful thing to have happened to one so full of love and life! Her spirits quelled, not even in the face of such gloom, and my pride and love for her only enriched and bloomed like an endless field of flowers. Even on her final day, she had found the strength and fortitude to laugh. And as I held her cold hand in mine for long moments after her passing, I allowed only a single tear to fall from my face and land on the floor of our empty and disheartened home. Beautiful those eyes at the window were, and yet I knew that although they searched, they could not see me. A powerful urge now demands that I go back into the house, find the lost soul of Rose, and be with her. Tell her how sorry I am from the deepest part of my heart that I had fled from her in fright, not recognising the tone of her voice through the ghostly whisper of her mouth. Perhaps now fate has given me another chance that I may yet have one last opportunity to speak kinder and more reassuring final words to my lost love. I carry myself forward on legs which suddenly feel more tired, and I enter the house, closing the door behind me. Making no attempts to find another candle to light, I instead feel my way towards the chair I had been sitting in when the last flame had been extinguished. I sit and breathe, sit and close my eyes, sit and think of nothing more than my sweet Rose, sit and wait. The expected voice whispers to my right. I turn there, whisper her name back, and feel her frigid hand upon my shoulder. The chill of it makes me jump an inch out of my chair, compelling Rose to speak once more. "No," she cries, "don't go." I sit and calmly reassure her I won't. And now I feel her cold cheek rest on my shoulder as her hand relocates to my arm. We remain silent for minutes as I hope the tears from my cheeks will not run down and splash against my love, revealing to her my heartache. Perhaps they would only fall through her to land on the floor beneath. As we sit, I realise I have entered Rose's world in more ways than one. Darkness permeated her life towards the end of her days, and now in whatever form of life she holds, silence, darkness, and an unrelenting search for her love are her only focus. The urge to shroud the house in the blackness I feared seems to be nothing more than Rose's attempt at showing me that she's still here, searching for me through whatever problem might make it difficult for her to do so in this lonely afterlife of hers. But lonely no longer. Now we have each other again, for a few quiet moments. Turning my head to the window, I see the first sign of dawn. Soon the room will fill with light, and my Rose will be gone, perhaps never to return. So I turn to her, and I tell her I love her, in this life and in all the mysterious lives beyond. I tell her that my thoughts are always of her, and that I will not let my heart become heavy with memories of her illness, but rather allow it to be lifted by remembering how courageous and kind she was in life, and how lucky I was to have meant something so dear to her. And when the first illuminance glow sneaks in through the window, it highlights Rose's face. Her eyes stare into the nothing she sees, but they smile just as her mouth does. Her cheek is wet, not from despair, I think, but from a relief at hearing the words that should have been spoken as she had lain dying. She is at peace, and I remember this as I watch her body become one with the sunlight. Thank you for listening to the Finding North podcast. Please follow the podcast on your preferred platform and head over to chrisamorris.com for all the latest. Next week's story is a comedy called The Search Log of John Trevor.